Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th Canto, Chapter 6, entitled Yadu Dynasty Retires to Prabhash, text number 11, is it? Yaschinchate prayata pani biradvaravno. Traya nirukta vidinesha vigritva. Ajatma yoga tayogi biratma maya. Yigya subi parama bhagavatare parista. Ya, which? Chinchate, I meditated upon. Prayatapani bi, by those with folded hands. Advara agno, in the fire of sacrifice. Traya, of the three Vedas. Rik, Yayur, and Sama. Nirukta, comprising the essential understanding presented in the Nirukta. Vidina, by the process. Isha, O Lord. Havi, the ghi meant for offering. Grihitva, taking. Adhyatma yoga, in that yoga system, meant for realization of one's true self. Uta, also. Yogi bi, by the practitioners of this yoga. Adma mayam, about your bewildering material energy. Yigasubi, who are inquisitive. Parama Bhagavate, by the most elevated devotees. Parista, perfectly worshipped. Translation: those about to offer oblations into the fire of sacrifice, in accordance with the Rig, Yajur, and Sama Vedas, meditate in your lotus feet. Similarly, the practitioners of transcendental yoga meditate upon your lotus feet, hoping for knowledge about your divine mystic potency. And the most elevated pure devotees perfectly worship your lotus feet, desiring to cross beyond your illusory potency. Purport: the words Atma Mayam Yigasubi are significant in this verse. The mystic yogis, Ajatma Yoga Uta Yogi Bi, are eager to acquire knowledge of the Lord's mystic potencies, whereas the pure devotees, Parama Bhagavatai, are eager to cross beyond the kingdom of illusion, so that they can serve Lord Krishna's lotus feet in pure loving ecstasy. In any case, everyone is interested in the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The atheistic material scientists are also fascinated by the external material potency of the Lord, and the gross sense gatavars are attracted by the physical body, which is also Atmamaya, or an expansion of the Lord's potency. Although all of the Lord's potencies are qualitatively one with the Lord, and therefore with each other, the blissful spiritual potency is nevertheless supreme, because it establishes relationships between the Lord and the pure living entities, on the platform of eternal happiness. Every living entity is originally a loving servitor of the Lord, and the spiritual energy of the Lord engages the living entity in its pure constitutional position beyond illusion. Our dreaming and waking experiences are both activities of the mind. However, the activities we perform while awake are more valuable because they establish us in our permanent situation. Similarly, at every moment, every living entity is experiencing one of its innumerable potencies, one of the innumerable potencies of the Supreme Lord. However, the experience of the spiritual potency is more significant because it establishes the living entity in its eternal constitutional position as a faithful servitor of the personality of Godhead. The demigods are glorifying the Lord's lotus feet because they are personally very eager to be purified by contact with those feet. Tavam grir asmakam asubhasya tumaki tushat. When a sincere devotee eagerly desires to attain shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, the Lord brings him to his personal abode, just as the demigods were brought to Dwarka by Lord Krishna's arrangement. Om Ajnanati Manandasya Yenandana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadhi Gaura Bhaktavinna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, here in the verse it is explained that those about to offer oblations into the fire of sacrifice, in accordance with the Rig, Yajur and Samavedas, meditate on your lotus feet. So, this may be a little bit bewildering to the mind, because if we really look at the mantras of the Rig, Yajur and Samaveda, they are oftentimes dedicated to the demigods, many times, and not actually to the Supreme Lord. So here it is said that those who offer oblations into the fire of sacrifice according to the Rig, Yajur and Samaveda, meditate on your lotus feet. So how to rhyme this when there are many injunctions for demigod worship in these scriptures? The reason is that whenever a fire sacrifice is performed, even if a particular demigod may be worshipped, in every sacrifice Lord Vishnu is always worshipped. He's always included. When Lord Vishnu is not worshipped in the sacrifice, it's not complete. So all the Vedic rituals, even the ones where demigods are being worshipped, include the worship of Lord Vishnu. And thus we see here that it says that the lotus feet of the Lord are worshipped in whenever the fire of sacrifice, according to Rig, Yajur and Samaveda, are being performed. But we understand that such worship may be mixed. Generally it is mixed. There are very few verses in the Rig, Yajur and Samaveda that worship the Supreme Lord directly. So a lot of those rituals that are being performed are karmakanda. And that means at best the meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna is mixed with other desires. Anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karmadi anavritam, Srila Rupa Goswami says that actually such kind of worship is not sufficient. When worship is mixed, it means that there is fruitive desire. When we worship the demigods, there is fruitive desire because the devatas, they give us temporary benefits. There is a difference, a distinction made between respecting the devatas and worshipping the devatas. We are respectful. A Vaishnava is respectful to the devatas and is appreciating whatever the devatas are doing for him. Because after all the material facilities on this planet, such as sunlight, rain, water, and name it, all that is controlled by the demigods. Thus, a Vaishnava is also respecting the demigods for the part that they play in this material world. But worshipping the demigods is a different thing. When we start worshipping the demigods, then we go for temporary benefits, because that's all they can supply. And then Krishna condemns it in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Kamaistaistarita jnana prapadyante nyadevata. Those who worship the demigods, their knowledge is stolen by material desires. They are ultimately Kamaistaistarita jnana. They are ultimately doing their worship to get blessings for their material life. But all such blessings are temporary. So what is the point? I mean, we can see how temporary everything is in the material world. A few days ago, Melbourne is crying in extreme heat, and now it's cold. It's totally different. And all the conditions change, obviously. I mean, the fires must be going down in this kind of weather. So, like that, everything changes in the material world. So, what is the benefit of doing worship for improving material conditions of life? But sometimes a devotee may become tempted and say, well, why not a bit of both? Why not invest something in the eternal and invest something in the temporary at the same time? Why not? Yes? In that way, we get the best of both worlds. Yes. It may be, but it does take something away. It does divide our faith. Because then, yes, where do we rely on Krishna? And where do we rely on the demigods? That is the difficulty. Sometimes in this movement we find that, why are you giving so much focus on Krishna and not worshipping the demigods? So because we put all our faith in Krishna. He said, Krishna, we are in your hands completely. And as you do, we put our faith there, but then sometimes less experienced devotees may forget to respect the demigods. They think, oh, demigods, no. No. Yeah, demigods, yes. We respect. But we will not ask them for benedictions. For that we reserve only Krishna. And Krishna, we're not asking him for anything, because he already knows anything, everything anyway. He is abhigya. It is said, Janmadiyasya yatum veyat itartas chatti svabhigya swarat. Lord Krishna is the origin of everything. He is abhigya, all-knowing. He is at the same time independent. So he'll decide. We'll leave it up to him. We simply understand that the purpose of this world, it's not that. Sometimes it is thought that this world is a gift of Krishna to us. Yes, Krishna was so kind that he made this material world for us so that we could have a good time here. That's the idea. And therefore they think religion just simply means to say, thank you, Krishna, for giving us this nice world where we can have a great time. And that's going on, and then in the middle of it, some disaster happens, either on a large scale or on a private scale, it doesn't matter. Right? And then suddenly it's not such a nice world anymore. And how is this possible? How can this happen in the world that's not so nice? A more sober person, who is not so passionate, can see things as they are. A passionate person is so full of desire to enjoy that a passionate person projects that desire to enjoy upon the world, upon everything. So a very passionate person is just projecting desire, and then he or she everywhere sees wonderful things. Yes. In that case, you know, an ordinary girl looks like the goddess of fortune. You see that in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam. You remember King Puranjan, and he meets this lady in the forest, and he's immediately totally convinced, yes. And he says, my dear, God is a fortune. Right? What happened to your lotus flower? Have you dropped it in the forest somewhere? Because God is a fortune is supposed to carry a lotus flower. But this lady was not carrying a lotus flower, but she looked like the goddess of fortune. So he said, have you dropped your lotus flower somewhere in the forest? Just see. So in other words, projecting, turning her into the goddess of fortune, which she obviously is not. She's not Lakshmi, but he wants Lakshmi. He wants Lakshmi, so he sees Lakshmi, right? The lady wants a prince, and just an ordinary Joe comes around the corner, but she's convinced that, oh, he's Prince Joe, right? For a little while, doesn't last that long, usually. That's the nature. So those who are in the mode of passion, they project upon reality. They project their own desires upon reality, and color it, and make it look really nice. But the truth of the matter is, the material world is not designed for happiness. And there's nothing that can fix it. Nothing. It's like a broken car, it cannot be fixed. It's finished. Old broken car, forget it. It's not even worth starting. As soon as you fix one thing, another thing is already broken. Some old thing. So the material world is like that. It cannot be fixed. So devotees are, it is described, are pessimistic about material life. They don't believe that you can create a perfect happy situation in the material world. We know dukkhavat anyavat sukham. Happiness and distress will come on their own accord. And sometimes you get one and sometimes you get the other. Fine. So therefore, knowing that, a devotee doesn't put his hopes on the material energy. We just don't. It doesn't mean that we don't want some comfort and something nice to happen to us. But we're not going to spend all our hopes that yes, I hope it's going to work out. We already think, well, sometimes it may work and sometimes it may not. And that's a given. My real happiness is not here in the material world. My real happiness is in the spiritual world. My real happiness is in the relationship with Krishna. And that is the difference between one who is doing Vedic sacrifices, which are mixed. A person who is doing such Vedic sacrifices, a little bit for Krishna and a little bit to fix my material situation at the same time, it means that we actually still believe, yes, I can be happy in this world. I can be. It can be done. Yes, it can be. Yes, absolutely. And actually the truth is, no. We'll never be happy in this world. I know it's a very hard thing to say, right? And not everyone may agree with it. But if you don't agree with it, then know that this is Maya, actually. This is the illusion. This is the work of Maya. This is what Maya does. It is called the Avaranatmika Shakti, the covering potency of Maya. This Avaranatmika Shakti, this covering potency of Maya, is exactly that. It's somehow or other putting us into the illusion that we think, yes, maybe it hasn't worked so far, but that doesn't mean that it cannot work. It can. It's just within the realm of possibility, and who knows, it might happen to me. It is possible to be happy in this material world. Yes. Know this to be the covering potency of Maya. And that is the way it is. Then there's a throwing potency of Maya. She throws opportunities. Wow. I've been waiting for this for so many years. I never thought it would come. And now it has come. What to do? Anyway, spiritual life. You can always worry about it tomorrow. Can you do? Yeah. So like this, that's why if we think that there is still, that we can be happy in the material world, then we'll always be looking for it. And then sometimes you think, yes, 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 this is it. And then after a little while, well, no, wasn't really it. And then again we think, this is it, this is it, this is it. That's actually how it is. I long ago, many years ago, I wrote a song which says, "These old, old hungry eyes have told me many lies, but maybe this one time I will be satisfied." You never know. Every time my eyes told me, this is it, yes, but it wasn't, it wasn't. But maybe this time it will be. Again and again, we'll try in the material world. So this is mixed devotional service. This mentality is still there in mixed devotional service. That we think, yes, maybe I'll be happy. And maybe we recognize this tendency in ourselves. It's easy to speak about it from a philosophical point, and one can give a nice lecture about it, and then step down of the Vyasa Sun, and then just still believe in that maybe, and still hope against hope, maybe I will be happy. All the hair is going white, yes? But maybe I will be happy in the material world. No, it's not there. It's not there. It is the spiritual world. It is the spiritual body. It's not the material body. It's not. It's just like in Durban we have a nice temple and it's sort of high, right? You're high up, and you look down around, and on one side there are nice tennis courts and people are having a great time, and on the other side there are these nice buildings and there's a horrible hospital, right? And that's just how it is. You have both sides. The place to play and the place to suffer. So let's be sober. This drill reminds me of my last visit to the dentist. What can I say? And then my dentist, he's a devotee, so he has a video built in the ceiling, and then you're lying in the dentist chair, and then he's playing videos of Prabhupada, right? So you're watching Prabhupada there somewhere in the spiritual world, and meanwhile he takes your teeth to the hellish planets. And it's sort of like, I get an identity crisis there. It's like a very strange experience. I don't quite know where I am. But I think it's hell, sort of. I think even the videos don't make me forget that it's actually hell where I am. So that's it in the material world. Everyone gets it sometimes, yes, and that's just how it is. So let's not waste our time here. Let us understand the material world. It's like a railway station. Or an airport or something like that. There was a little movie of Mr. Bean. He comes into a hotel and there's a bell and he goes like bing, 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 yeah? Three times of course. And then a man with a sour face suddenly emerges from behind the counter. And he wants to see the room, and okay, they take him up to the room, and he's looking around, and okay, he takes it, moves in, and then he opens up his suitcase, and then it starts. He takes out a flower vase with flowers, and he puts that knife in the room. He pulls out a Black & Decker drill and starts to drill holes and hangs paintings on the wall, and he has, like, finally at the end a sign, home sweet home. And then he looks at the room and he notices that the bathroom's not attached. So it's next door to his room, but you have to go out of the room into the corridor, and it's a common bath. So he takes a saw blade, puts it on his Black & Decker, cuts a door out of the wall, locks the bathroom from the inside, puts on his sleeping head, sleeping gown, takes his teddy bear, and goes to bed. Very happy. Right? It's awkward. It's a funny thing, because he's treating a temporary situation like permanent. And we do the same thing. We do exactly the same thing. So that is the difference between those who perform sacrifices with fruitive intention for getting some blessings for this life, or those who are yogis. Yogis are trying to obtain power. So their whole thing is power. They try to become more and more powerful. Yes, and they become very powerful. They get so many powers, and they can do all kinds of things. Yes, they can extend the duration of life. Yes, such yogis, you see amazing things. In the Kumbh Mela, I saw a yogi head dug into the ground. I was watching it for about 5 minutes. So after I watched it for 5 minutes, I said, well, there are a few options. Number one is the man must have suffocated by now, because nobody can put his head in the sand for longer than 5 minutes. Or he has an oxygen bottle there under the sand. Didn't? Or the third option is he really has mystic power. Right? I thought, there's three options. Whatever it is, there are yogis. They are very powerful. Very powerful. But then, what can they do with that mystic power? All kinds of things. They can control things in this world, on this planet, or they can do better. They can even travel to higher planets where life is much better than here. But finally, when they reach the higher realms of the universe, there everyone has mystic power. Everyone has mystic power. And everyone can fly around at will. They travel between planets as they like. So there, a yogi is just an average man on the block, right? And here he was very powerful, but there he's just an ordinary guy, like anybody else, and there may be even some who have more mystic power than him. So, and the pleasures, there are heavenly pleasures, so difficult to move on. So the chance, since he is into power, he's into himself, me, and my desires, my needs, my power, for me, you see. Whereas a devotee is totally different. For me, I don't need very much, a little bit, yes, to sort of survive, but for the rest, Krishna, I just want your service. Please, let me just do some service for you. Your pleasure, yes, you are important. Yes, whatever you need, that is the main thing. And in that mood, gradually one's material desires diminish, and gradually we become pure devotees. So this is our process. It is selfless. Bhukti mukti siddhikame sakala ashanti. So the sense gratifier, or the yogi, or the one who wants liberation, they are all not peaceful. They have no peace. They're all plagued by material desire. And only a devotee can be free from material desire. So Srila Prabhupada came to give us this. This is the highest. It's very rare. It's something extraordinary. Anywhere in this world, it's extraordinary. Prabhupada was not an ambassador from India. Right? He was not coming to bring the culture of India. Prabhupada was not just coming to revive Vedic culture. Prabhupada was not to a perfect representative of that ancient tradition. Yes, that we know very well. No, Prabhupada was actually, even in India, extraordinary. When the devotees went to Vrindavan with Prabhupada for the first time, the first devotees, Kirtananda and Achyutananda, they were thinking, and now we're going to Vrindavan, and Vrindavan will be full of devotees like Prabhupada, pure devotees. But it wasn't. It wasn't. They had heard that in Vrindavan everyone is a devotee. And they saw that, but they also saw, but nobody is a devotee like Prabhupada. Nobody. Even in Vrindavan, there was nobody like him. He stood out completely. Vrindavan, best place of India. Best place of India. The place of the devotees. But even there, in that place, no one could match Prabhupada. No one had that mood of everything for Krishna. Just everything for Krishna. Right? So, thus he started this movement. And he took it to the West, to people who had no idea about anything. Right? Who were fallen and habituated to sinful things. And Prabhupada came and he gave that extraordinary pure devotional service. And we are sitting here today still looking at it like, wow, that's really more than we expected. And we sort of got attracted to this movement and we became a bit involved in this movement. And then only sort of on the way it begins to dawn on us what actually this movement is all about. And we just think, my God, it really doesn't give you an inch, doesn't it? I mean, not an inch, nothing, no. It is a fact that this movement doesn't give us an inch of material life, an inch of sense gratification, not an inch. Not a little, no, not a little. Nothing? Can we have little? Can we make a deal? Something? You know? No. 100%, 100%, 100% pure devotional service. So Prabhupada gave a lecture like this. And the lecture was just all the time that actually we must be 100% pure devotees. No less will do. Okay? So, and he kept on hammering the point. So gradually, the devotees became depressed, you know. Gradually everyone felt that, well, we're just not there. Right? And we're never going to make this. Right? So the mood became a little heavy. And then Prabhupada was seated on a Vyasasana, similar to in Melbourne, that is, with a few steps coming down. But the steps were, maybe it was a little higher, the steps a little bigger. So as he was coming down the Vyasasana after the lecture, he said, as he came down one step, he said, anyway, 90% will do. And then he took another step down. He said, even 80% will do. And he came one more step down, and he said, even 70% will do. And then he took his chadar and just threw it over his shoulder and walked away. So, what does this mean? What does this mean? Is there a loophole after all? Yeah, thank God. We were desperately looking, right? It was getting too much, you know? Everything 100% pure devotion, impossible. And he thought, like, is this Lord Chaitanya's mercy? Yeah? I mean, it's got to be a little more generous than that. There has to be a loophole somewhere. And then when it seemed, Prabhupada said 90, 80, 70%, well, now we have to only figure out what 70% is. That's easy. That's okay. So that we're very good at that in the West, you know, calculations like this, 7/10 exactly. So if you apply that to a week, you know, that gives you like out of seven days, 30% out of 7 days, right? For sense gratification. That's not bad. That's not bad at all. Right? If you look at it that way, pretty good, right? So you could put it, translate it into time, you can translate it into quality as well, right? Okay, bring it down, call quality only 70%. And of course, I mean, you know, 69 is as good as 70, isn't it? I mean, 60 is getting close. Give me a break. And like this, we get, is there any loophole at all? Is there any leeway at all? Well, I'm so sorry to bring the bad news. No, there is not. Not an inch. Right? It is really we must strive for 100% pure devotional service. Then if it doesn't work, well, then there can be some mercy. And that's where the 90, 80, 70% kicks in. But if you want the mercy, can I have an advance on the mercy, please? Can I have the 30% of mercy first, please? Please? I'll take that. And then I'll work on the 70% surrender. No. We must work on 100% surrender, and then we may, in the end, get 30% of mercy. That's how it is. But we want the 30% of mercy first, please. Yes, can I have an advance, please? Yes. So this is the case. So it's not cheap. So he gave a movement which is like quite amazing. And that's why I'm saying we are still sort of dazed, you know. It begins to dawn upon us what kind of movement we're in. But anyway, the movement itself is so powerful. It is so powerful that everything is purifying us. And that is actually the amazing thing. Everything is purifying us. So this lecture has two sides. It has the side of strictness, and it has the side of giving it our best, and then it has the other side of how amazingly merciful is this movement. Anyone who gets touched by it makes so much advancement. Anybody who, your life becomes changed by it. Never to be the same. Never to be the same. You couldn't be the same anymore. It goes deep. It really transforms us inside. And one develops faith in Prabhupada, and one loses faith in material things. Really do. And then at the end of life, when it gets serious, at the end of life, you have to say goodbye. Then suddenly, it becomes possible. Then suddenly all our devotional service comes together, and suddenly we are detached, and suddenly we can let go. Even although our whole life we struggled with material desire, at the end of life, somehow or other we can let go. That's how powerful it is, this movement. So we're very fortunate. So we should not become disheartened if we still have some material desires, and we're already 80 years old and still serving. No one's 80 years old here, you know, everyone's young. But the point is there, that even if at the end of our life we still have material desires, somehow or other, just in those very last moments, we can make huge jumps of advancement, because actually we don't have real faith in the material energy. A little bit, but not such strong faith. Therefore we're not surprised. It's like, I'm not so shocked that people died in a fire. I'm not. So everyone says, oh, but this is very insensitive, you know, how can you say such a thing like that? So no, I'm not so shocked, because it's sort of, I expect this world to do things like that. I expect it. I know that such things can happen. So when it does happen, I'm not so shocked, because I know this is how it is. Keshava likes stories. He told me, he tried to tell me a story yesterday. He said, have you heard this story? But it was my story, actually, which I told in a previous visit. It's okay. So I'm going to tell you the story now. Some of you may have heard it before, you never know, because I tell it sometimes. But we were in Radadesh in Belgium, and they were going to organize a bus tour to Scandinavia. Scandinavia, all the way up to the North Pole, practically, right? So to get the mood going on the bus, they had some videos of polar bears and penguins and all that, just so that we really felt, yes, we're going now towards the North Pole, right? Serious. So, real adventure. And then, this movie, it was really quite amazing. There were these, big penguins, these really big ones, these emperor penguins, they call them, huge penguins, right? And so, they were laying eggs before the winter, and then the ladies sat on the eggs for a while, and then it was getting cold and there was no more sun, and then the ladies went south, but the man continued and sat on those eggs throughout the winter at minus 70 temperatures. Then at the end of the winter, when the first little bit of sun came, the man also went to the south for a holiday and left the eggs all alone. And then the sun started warming up those eggs, and then suddenly hundreds of eggs lying there on the snow, and then they all cracked. And all little penguins came out, and they came there on the ice, and they had it was on a bit of a slope going down. And those little penguins, they're big flat feet were just like skis, and within a moment they figured it out. I tell you, it didn't take them seconds to know how to ski, and within moments they were going down the hill, leaning forward on their skis, going straight down the hill, having a great time. And then they came over the edge and just flew into the air and were just taking a big dive towards the water, and then from the water came this huge gaping mouth of a killer whale, and he ate all my little penguins in one bite. Oh God, what a movie. this Keshava is more than a story. This is a trauma. This is a deep trauma, right? I never got over this movie, I tell you. I never got over it. My little penguins, this demon killer whale ate all my penguins. My God. My God. But I never forgot, This material world is just too much. Just too much. So, I expect it, when it comes, I'm not surprised, and I'm ready. Yeah? We were driving in Mawillenbaugh, and we were going to Byron Bay, and on the way, the devotee is driving, the windows were fogging up, so he said, maybe we should get some air in the car, meaning open the window, right? But instead he turned on the AC, right? And somehow or other, whatever it was, he turned on the wrong button, it became worse. The windows became totally covered in fog. You couldn't see anything anymore. And he lost control. He lost control, and next moment we're off the road. And we're in the grass, and then we start slipping, sliding, and back on the road, and on the other side of the road in the grass, and up, three times up and down over the road, and couldn't see anything. Well, I was the first one in the car, Krishna, Krishna. I've gone through this before, I mean, I've been in a few cars before that did funny things. So I know, you know, whenever the material world starts shaking, Krishna, Krishna, huh? Krishna, Krishna. Yes, let's be ready. Let's be ready. This is the material world, boys and girls. Anything can happen, anytime, believe me. Huh? And if you don't, I'll tell you another story. True story, Scouts Honor, right? I was in Mayapur this time. And staying in a building, in the conch building on the top of the building, in a room, having a nice view. And one morning at 6 o'clock, I'm in the room and it is as if someone has a big hammer and is hitting the wall. So I'm looking like, what's going on? Is someone coming through the wall? What's this? So I'm looking at the wall, next moment, the wall cracks and the cracks come straight into the floor in my direction, and all the tiles stand up like this, you know, in the floor. Huge crack in the floor. I was thinking, maybe the Godzilla will come out or something like that, yeah? Some big dinosaur or something. Anyway, that didn't happen, but the crack was real. Can you imagine that? The earth cracks open, the bottom cracks of your room. You think such things happen in movies and not in real life, but they do. They do. It took me exactly 30 seconds to grab everything valuable that was in that room and to fly out the door. Somehow or other, I managed to save my material attachments and myself as well. And within 30 seconds, I was out the door. But how is it possible that such things happen? And what was it? Krishna knows. Maybe an earthquake. Who knows? But that's the material world. Anything can happen, anytime. Don't be in illusion. So don't have high hopes. Let's just be serious about going back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Questions, comments? And I know sense gratification is attractive, but just remember those penguins. Poor penguins. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know what to say because you're supposed to end on a happy note, and this maybe. Anyway, this is as happy as it comes. Can't make it any happier than that, you know. At least I had a great time skiing. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Sometimes I hear they're not going to count for me.
Huh?
I hear sometimes, this person or that person, they're just never going to be able to sort of.
No, any human being can become a devotee. And any animal can get the mercy through a human being. Or some other higher being, you know. Krishna can give it directly, or some demigod can give it also. But an animal can't do it on its own. See, animals can take prasada, but it takes someone to offer it. It's not that animals are going to offer it. No? Animals can be trained, and then they can bow down before the deities, and then they can start doing it. No? It's known that elephants that used to carry the deities used to storm into the temple and bow down before the deities, and then left their body in South India. And they've got Gajendra. So even animals. So even two-legged animals. There's hope for us, eh? Well, everybody has an animal inside. It's well hidden. It's not always. But with many people it's well hidden, and with some it's not so hidden. But inside, that animal is there, and it wants to break loose. If you know what I mean. Loose. Yes. And what do you do about that? But devotional service is
can transform that animal. Yeah, in Germany, they have this. They have books, and they have something like a book about the inner Schweinhund, which how to translate that? I'll use it. You know what a Schweinhund is? Anyway, what is a Schweinhund? What's the translation for Schweinhund? You can think about it.
I'll think about it.
Something like swine is a pig and hund is a dog, you know. So it's definitely something low, a combination of a hog and a dog, something. Well, so the best of both, you know. And that's so there is something like that living in us, the combination of a cross between a hog and a dog. Yeah. But even then, Chaitanya Hare Krishna works. I mean, look, think of it like this. If we are here, then anybody can be here. That should be convincing enough. Anybody else?
Sometimes we can see that people have extremely disturbed minds. They might have an attraction to Krishna consciousness, but they often don't laugh. And is that caused by the karma they have, that they have like a very simple background and so they can't, they feel tempted, so they can't take Krishna consciousness?
Yeah. They don't last externally. That means they cannot fit necessarily in the nice designed Hare Krishna movement with its little temples, with picket fences and so on. But there is the greater Hare Krishna movement out there, and that's not following all the rules and regulations. But the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra reaches everywhere, and all kinds of people are chanting, and they don't stop. And some of these people, they may be addicted to drugs or whatever, but they somehow or other are devotees, and they are chanting a little bit sometimes, or they tell people about Krishna. And in my karmic life there were some crazy people like that who were into Krishna and who sort of actually encouraged me to go for Krishna consciousness, although they themselves were far gone. And even so far gone that I won't describe the details of what they were doing right here now off the Vyasa set. But like that. So people carry on with their spiritual life. It's never lost, Nehabhigramanasasti. But temporarily it looks as if they get covered again and they cannot. But inside it works. Inside it goes on. And we had one person who had a mental problem and was in a mental hospital, and was just a chronic, well, or whatever you want to call it, was a long-term case, and he was always in and out, and they had him on heavy pills and so on. But he always used to distribute prasadam in the mental hospital. And then after a while we started to get calls in the temple, and they were totally crazy, totally crazy. Crazy calls, crazy people. But then in between they would say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then so something crazy again. So, even there, it worked. It goes everywhere. Amsterdam is a crazy place. So there we had a man who would come to the temple, and he was the incarnation of the moon, Mr. Moon. And it come for years. Mr. Moon, and he's convinced. He was like Chandra, incarnation of the moon. But eventually, he began to realize that at least he was not his moon body. At least he was an eternal soul. He was the moon, but on a higher level, he was an eternal spirit soul. So, Krishna consciousness doesn't follow only the pattern of convincing people, they join, they become nice temple devotees. No, it reaches everywhere, all kinds of people. Not everyone goes back in one life, but who cares about that? They'll go back to Godhead. Therefore, everyone who chants Hare Krishna once is a devotee. Yeah? Well, that's already big, because think of some who have chanted Hare Krishna once. Right? Yeah? And that Lord Chaitanya said. So, that's pretty good. Okay, enough is enough. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.